Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. It's a great way to start a podcast when we're laughing before it's even started. So I'm joined by Matthew from Hail Hail History and Andrew H, who was the person who mocked me when they said that the podcast needed to start by 7:30 the other day. And I said, well, if it goes to extra times and penalties, that'll be tight. He's now on his way and he'll join us. How are you doing, Matthew? Did you enjoy the game?
I did. I think it was a strange one, you know, because obviously the first half, the first 45 minutes was the best we've played comfortably this season. You know, I mean, yeah. I don't think there's any question that, apart from perhaps not taking enough chances, that was the one, if you were criticising it. The first half was everything we've been complaining about all season. You know, there was a huge bit of energy, there was aggression, they were creating chances, they were showing a bravery on the ball, they were pushing, you know, even like the number of times Trusty in particular, but even Scales, ended up no far off the Rangers 18-yard box because they had pushed forward and had gone on a run. Now, I know that you've got to watch, I know that can go against you, but I thought the first half looked absolutely brilliant. And then fundamentally, the second half, okay, it went a bit different. There's criticisms that you can make that I'm sure we're going to come to throughout it. But fundamentally, you're playing the second Rangers team in a semi-final, and you've won. I mean, there isn't really anything more to actually say. It was a great day.
So I put on the group chat, I thought Tenecki had a really good first half. I thought he was a great out ball for us to just, people were just pinging the ball over the top of them down to the, and using his pace to get onto it. Now, he may have deficiencies in terms of finishing and his final ball, which naturally you can only put up with for so long, but for the purposes of what we were trying to achieve in that game, I thought his first half was excellent. He was just this perfect out ball for us with pace. And Sarachi played well, bombing up. I thought him and Sarachi linked up really well first half with pace. And yeah, I just thought it was an all-round excellent performance. I thought we were a wee bit nervous. Strangely enough, once they went to 10 men, we were a wee bit nervous. But anyway, I also think if we'd taken all our chances, the game would have been over at half-time.
Yeah, I think so. Today, I thought, was actually very similar in many ways. If you look at the overall game, I thought today was very similar to a Postecoglou performance.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that one of the strengths of Ange's team, but also one of the big downsides, if it didn't go for you, was we would tend to absolutely batter teams, and particularly the opening half hour. And, you know, if you remember the famous, you know, the February game, you know, the first one where there was no Rangers fans, you know, at Celtic Park when we beat them 3-0, and we just took them apart. You know, we scored early. That was great. Postecoglou's teams would do that a lot. They would really batter teams, and we would get 3-4 goals ahead, and then on the hour mark you would tire, and it didn't matter because the game was already done. The downside of Postecoglou's teams were, though, that if you battered yourself energy wise for the first hour and didn't actually manage to take any chances, or perhaps were only one ahead, then teams knew they could start to pick you off as things went on. And I thought it was a little bit like that today. I thought we were excellent in the first half. We really, really, very high energy. You know, I say lots of aggression, really pushed them. But because we maybe didn't take as many chances as we had, it inevitably leaves it open for you where there's perhaps a worry to, you know, we've not scored enough. I know it's that stereotype, you know, 1-0, 2-0 even as well, but 1-0 is always that dangerous scoreline of, you know, it doesn't, it only takes us just a moment's lack of concentration and it goes the other way. So I think, as I say, it reminded me a lot of those things. Yeah, as I say, as we go over the course of this, we'll talk about the individual problems that perhaps there are. And we shouldn't get carried away. You know, it was great. As I say, we should be happy. It was a great day. You beat Rangers in a semi-final. Why would you not be happy? But the next steps are important as well. And O'Neill and Maloney will, of course, know that.
Andrew, your thoughts on the game? We've just been filling time till you came up the stairs. I was just commenting that you were the guy that said that when I suggested that extra time and penalties might make a podcast starting before 9:30 tight, you were the one that was like, that'll be easy.
No, well, sorry, it's my sister's birthday today, so I was at a birthday tea in Strathbungo, and I'm just dashing over for here, talking to my boy, actually. Quite an interesting analogy he gave me, my 15-year-old. Like, who'd ever thought that Kung Fu Panda would be brought to mind today? Because he says the dynamic between, like, O'Neill and, I've written this down, the dynamic between O'Neill and Maloney, because he thinks Maloney's really kind of directing operations. Martin O'Neill is Master Oogway, you know, the turtle. And Sean Maloney is Master Shifu, who actually, like, if anybody knows the films, you look as if you know the films, Matthew. Master Oogway is the turtle who doesn't say much, but he was the one that saw the potential in Kung Fu Panda when everybody thought he was a big blithering idiot. But what it comes down to is that when he identifies him, it's Master Shifu that has to teach him. You know, that has to bring it all together. He just stands back and just says these pearls of wisdom. You know, when whatever he does, when he doesn't speak much, doesn't he, not, Matthew? But whenever he does speak, it's of great import. So there you go. Celtic are managed by the kind of team behind Kung Fu Panda.
I thought it was to do with the Rangers challenge on Tony Ralston that Kung Fu Panda was coming.
Well, there's that and all. And, you know, I'd love to. I've just managed to see some highlights and I was fizzing listening to the radio post-match. They were going on about Celtic should have been down to 9 men and all the rest of it. Then I watched the highlights and it's like, oh, I thought that was a red card for Trusty because it wasn't in the action of, he wasn't following in and trying to, it was a deliberate, I've stopped, but I'll just do a wee flick out to his face. And you can't really put your boot near a player's face when they're on the deck. But I still don't, why do, is their Etch-a-Sketch broken? Why have we not seen any lines for this offside goal? It didn't look offside at all.
I have now seen a line for
the offside
goal.
Have you now seen a line?
Yeah, and it's the...
Is it like Etch-a-Sketch squiggles?
Frame before the pass. So the
they
ball...
They did that the other night with another game. I don't know if it was the Hibs game or something. I thought, this is the right frame.
Yeah. It gets back to the Norwegian guy that we had on our podcast who has subsequently had lots of dialogue with me about Norwegian stuff because he's a TV producer and he's on their case. There's regular instances now in Norway where they are admitting post-game that it should have been the next frame or the previous frame or what, you know. That,
yes.
I mean, that was his whole thing was there's just so much in a, there's so much.
Yeah.
And it gets back to my point of, I like the principle of VAR. You know, as Ronnie sitting next to me in the at Celtic Park made the valid point to me. The team that has suffered most from VAR coming in is Rangers.
Yes.
Because Rangers are the team who have had fewer penalties since VAR's come in and have had more penalties given against them in terms of where they used to be and where they're now at. We are...
Is this not another podcast? Is this not the huddle board? Are we turning into the huddle board? Is that not their terrain?
His point is...
Queering their pitch.
We complain about decisions one way and, you know, there's decisions... But in general... It's probably, for everybody else, it's been pretty much even Stevens. But for them, they've suddenly had to play on the same playing field as everybody else, and it's stuffed them, is his point about VAR. But my issue with VAR is, see, those ones with the lines like that, because actually I've watched it back, Maeda's running
yes.
out,
yeah.
and their defender's going back. And as we discussed when we did the podcast with the Norwegian guy, the speed that players can run at, there's 30 centimetres of space between frames that can't be measured. So therefore...
30 centimetres is huge. That's
30 centimetres in a move like that's enormous.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, overall, you could see Celtic seem more like Celtic. 22 efforts on target. Sorry, 22 efforts on goal, 10 on target. And there is a sadness for me because I hated the way it ended with Brendan Rodgers. And you know, I'm incredibly grateful for so many great memories he has given us as Celtic supporters. But what I think it demonstrates, and what's like the kind of the straitjacketed football that Celtic had ended up playing, but Brendan straitjacketed him not only to his football but to his selections. Brendan, it's really weird that Celtic board and Brendan, the kind of dissolution of the relationship, because both of them, that happened because both of them exhibit a fixed mindset. Celtic board exhibit a fixed mindset about, no, there's nothing wrong with our strategy or our policies about how we bring in players, about how, and Brendan brought in at this, no, there's nothing wrong with how I play the football or the guys I think are worth giving a chance to, which is not Callum Osmond, it's not Johnny Kenny. There's just two fixed mindsets. It's so weird that it's like, and Brendan, all this crap about, oh, he was almost deliberately trying to fail because it was showing the board that they hadn't given him the tools. No, it just became, as I say, a fixed mindset. And it's like, he wasn't willing to see that, well, I might as well try this. I should try this guy, should try that guy. Maybe we need to change it a wee bit. Maybe we need to mix it up a wee bit. Maybe we'll become too predictable. Maybe we'll become too ponderous. He wouldn't think that in his mind because he's so rigid in the sense of, no, I know what I'm doing. I'm Brendan Rodgers. I know what's a good player or a bad player. I know what we can get out of this squad. And it's no by turning to Osmond or Kenny or whatever. I don't care how light I am in those areas. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that.
But to be fair, he did play Kenny at the end because he had no other option.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it just became someone who, it just, like, I was looking back in his quotes last night at the end of the transfer window, and he said, I just feel empty. And he managed like he felt empty in the last 6 weeks of his tenure. He felt, there's nothing I can't turn this around. I can't make it better than it is. This is the best we've got. And that is that fixed mindset. And I think Anil's come in, even just that freshness, just, this is more entertaining. These last two games have been two of the more entertaining games of this season. Let's do grats, in fairness to, but just, there was something that just settled in Brendan's head, and he just couldn't get beyond it. He couldn't get beyond his... It was legitimate. He started off with a legitimate... he was ill-served by the club's transfer dealings. Completely ill-served. But that just became a boulder he couldn't get over.
Matthew, what do you... How much input do you think Sean Maloney's having? And the reason I asked that was the...
Master Shifu.
The interview before the game of Martin O'Neill on Radio Scotland just about to get the car. He seemed more surprised than I was that James Forrest wasn't picked in the team the way he was talking.
I think it was always fairly accepted that O'Neill's first time, and that's actually why I'm wearing this. I sort of thought I'm going to go back in time and put on a jersey that reminds me of the first time O'Neill was here. But I think with Martin O'Neill, it was always fairly accepted that he was a sort of similar style to Clough. In the sense, Clough wasn't really a training ground manager. He was more a turn up on the day, you're doing this and I'm going to shout at you until you do what I want. And I think that was always sort of apparently, a lot of the role that O'Neill played first time. So I don't think there's any question that it's going to be even more so this time. I know O'Neill everybody keeps talking about his age. He himself, I saw his line today, that he was 73 at the start of the week and he said after the game, it feels like he's 94 now, So
yeah.
I think just on a practical level, the reality is he's not been at Celtic where Sean Maloney has been. He has never been much of a training ground manager. Because Maloney, you just assume again from having been around more. I don't think there's any question that apart from O'Neill, I think O'Neill probably serves two purposes so far. One, as everybody knows, he's partly there as a shield. If the board had said the other night, oh, Brendan Rodgers has left, Sean Maloney's got the job, people would be sort of burning effigies at the car park. But if you say instead, Martin O'Neill's taken over, assisted by Sean Maloney, then it's a very different scenario in terms of how people perceive that. I think, though, I don't think there's any doubts that Maloney will be a driving force in the game. Now, that's not to say he should get the job, Although clearly, I think there's an element where this is probably a sort of audition. Maybe not, or at least an audition for a vice manager, potentially. Brian thinks otherwise. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know, is the simple and honest answer. I don't know. I think what O'Neill's main thing was, so as I said, his first role, O'Neill, was to provide a sort of shield for Maloney.
Be a unifying figure, even.
Absolutely, yeah. But I suspect a lot of it today, and today felt, for the first time in a long time, like an O'Neill team. You know, that first half especially, it was an O'Neill team. It was aggressive. And even if you look at when the Rangers player was, when Asgard was sent off, you saw the way Maeda instantly flew in. Said, what are you doing? And I think that, I mean, that's what you associate with an O'Neill team. You know, like, you know, the classic, if Neil Lennon had got battered, then Baldy or Thompson or Sutton or someone was going to come flying in and show them that, you know, there was a unity. So I suspect that what O'Neill does is in some ways, it's similar to what Andrew said about the issue of unity. But I think it's very much about coming in, bringing it together, an aggression. Even at 73, I imagine O'Neill is still a bit of is a very hard taskmaster on the day in terms of what he's asking for people and what he expects. But I would imagine Maloney did drive a lot of the decisions, simply because a week ago, what was Martin O'Neill? Whereas Sean Maloney was actually a Celtic employee.
But even in that, like, sorry, I'm really labouring this, but even if we take the Kung Fu Panda thing, right, we've got Master Master Shifu, and Kung Fu Panda is actually Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor spoke like he was part of the coaching team after the game tonight. I want to thank the players. It's been a hard week for us. He speaks like he's almost the third point in the triangle. This kind of triangle that's running the show in the senior level right now.
That is what it should be. I mean, ultimately, your captain should always be a central part. You know, even if Brendan Rodgers was still here, Cal McGregor should be a very important part of decision making, because I know that there's always been a difference in how we view captains as against how the Continentals view captains and the role and all the rest of it. But your captain should be at the heart of it. Now, if you think of what's happened this week, you've lost your manager, you've got a guy coming in, you know, that's not managed for years, hasn't been at Celtic for two decades. It would be surprising if Cal McGregor wasn't a big influence. And given that, I mean, who knows, but, you know, McGregor, more than perhaps anyone, even more than Brown and all that have done it, if McGregor's not a manager one day, I'll be astounded. You know, he just seems like a manager. I mean, maybe a Celtic manager, we'll see. But, I mean, Cal McGregor is clearly going to be a manager somewhere at some stage. So, and given his age and given his role as captain, then frankly, he should be the one that's driving it with the players saying, I'm actually a leader. Because I think sometimes that's where a problem is. At times where managers and captains don't get on is where you sort of think, where they don't work together. It can only work effectively if it's very much the manager sets the stall out, and on the pitch, I as captain am going to ensure that the vision is delivered. You know, rather like a chairman, chief executive to some extent, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I was there all through the Paul Le Guin. Used to be, and when he deposed like Barry Ferguson, he said, "Who's going to be your captain?" And he went, "Does it really matter that much?" And people, he was like just a guy who just thought, like, didn't he know Scott? He says, "Why are you so obsessed by the captain?" But like, he used to say, "It isn't any given Friday, you know." And it became such a, as you say, such a kind of weeping sore, Matthew, in the sense that, like, could I be getting a feedback for somebody? Is it me? No,
you. I'm not hearing it. Carry on.
No, that's fine. No, it was like, it became such a weeping sore about that, because him and Ferguson and Boyd, you know, being kind of subversives behind the scenes kind of thing and undermining them. And that, as you say, Matthew, if all those aren't in place, but Callum McGregor for me would be the model player. If I was a manager, that's who I'd want as my captain. I'd want someone like that. I mean, some of the stuff that's been written about Callum McGregor, said online about Callum McGregor in the last 3 months, it's pitiful. It's pitiful. This whole idea that the guy's finished. How many times have you read he's finished? Did you see him after 120 minutes? People are out on their feet. Did you see him? He looked as fresh as newly cast paint. You know, he's not finished. He was having a bad time. His form dipped. It happens.
Auntie Jamie's finished.
No, I think with Callum McGregor, I mean, I really like McGregor. McGregor remains my favourite player in the team, and has been for years now. And I think with McGregor, what the problem he's had this season. One, as you say, players have dips in form, which is an issue. Two, the big problem he's had this season is it's rather like Paul McStay in the early 90s, that it's not so much that he's had a dip, it's that he's been expected to do more. He's been expected to carry the team. You know, this idea that he's not been as effective, that's partly because, especially in Europe, teams have looked at our strategy. Our strategy is give it to McGregor. And teams have recognised, well, if we put two men on him, the way that the rest of the Celtic team are playing, there's no one else that's going to lift the load. So effectively, all we do is we cut off at source Celtic's main route forward. And that, I think, is why McGregor has been struggling to some extent, because teams, and a lot of Scottish teams have done the same as well. They've gone,
Hearts did it at half-time?
Well, that's just what you say. Hearts is exactly what Hearts did. So, you know, all of this, yeah, it's nonsense. But I think that's, again, we've spoken about this on multiple occasions, and I suppose to some extent we are showing our age. But it is a social media thing. It is that instant thing of, I'm not happy. And rather than having a nuanced discussion where you say, well, he's got this going for him, but that's maybe not so good. Yeah. It's like, no, it's finished. That's it. That's done. Let's get him out the door. And it's just an overreaction. He's still got a huge role to play, but other people do as well. And but that's...
I think that there's almost part... You know, they always talk about managers, always talk about partnerships. I think you're seeing him and Engels working better together. Like, yeah. Working closer together. Even the Celtic's midfield three are not so detached. Like, I think the midfield is working slightly better. They didn't really use the midfield. Like, Martin O'Neill is not going to, because he wants to get the ball forward quicker, which maybe suits Celtic midfield as well, because Rangers should have been able to overrun Celtic to the midfield, but they didn't because Celtic used the width.
So we want to get this wrapped up in 18 minutes. I'm going to go through some key things in the game. First of all, the goal. Matthew, what do you think of the goal? The offside goal, first of all.
Well, do you know, I mean, I actually was slightly cursing Maeda. Because he obviously had just missed a really good chance just before it, when I don't know why he didn't take it in further when he seemed to have the chance to do it. And then suddenly you get the goal, brilliant, and then it's cut off, and then you watch it, you see it again later and all the rest of it, and you go, he's offside, you know, he's caught it. Now, I know it's actually much more complicated than that, but just in terms of the way it was spun, I thought, God, Maeda's missed the sitter, and then he's cost us the goal. I mean, it just felt at that point in time, like, and I suppose with the actual goal, the goal that we get, something was coming. Again, it's not felt like that all season. I can't think of any time this season when you've been sitting going, are we away to score in the next 5 minutes? You can tell we're battering them, we're pressing them, we're creating chances. And it was great. It was great simply because it was a goal. And even the goal that was chopped off, it was a goal that was coming just based on the fact we weren't giving Rangers any free time. Every time they had it, we were pushing them. If they were losing the ball, we were winning it back. So from that perspective, it was great. In terms of it getting chopped off, I suppose this is my problem with VAR generally. Do you know what? I've seen lines, whether they're right or not, we can debate these things all the time, but I've seen lines that say it's like, you know, his toenails off. And let's say that's the case. This is what I hate about VAR. It's not clear and obvious. Yeah. This nonsense that that's it's a clear and obvious error. You can't sort of say, you know, even if his toenail is genuine enough, that's not a clear and obvious error. Now, if what we're actually saying is VAR's purpose is just to re-referee games, then that's fine. I don't like VAR, but let's at least say that's what it is. But let's not do the sort of thing of pretending, yeah, VAR is only there for clear and obvious errors, then spend ages with getting wee sort of rulers out so we can measure half a millimetre just in case. You know, I think we're not far off going, you know, well, that guy's hair is currently 2 inches long. That guy's hair is currently 2.00001 inch long.
And VAR would never get me. I'll get you, VAR.
But, I mean, for the first goal, again, it's what it is. I would be more upset, perhaps, if you hadn't gone on to win. The reality was, it was a good example of Celtic pressure. And for all I was disappointed at that, for all I was disappointed at Maeda for not taking the chance in where he really should have done better, it didn't really matter because you obviously got a goal relatively quick after. So, and it was, of course, some sort of witchcraft because it was from a corner.
Yes. Well, actually, no, because I keep making the point. Last season, we had the best goals per corner rate of in the SPFL, and we've got goals this season from corners. So, Andrew,
and then
I like Engels' delivery from corners. Sometimes they're not every corner's going to be perfect, but if he gets it in there, he hits it in with pace at just the right height.
You think
so, Andrew,
it,
the goal.
Today, Sturm Graz, and he's only been back in the team really since the kind of Sturm Graz, if you like. So, like how important that's been to big games, big wins that could change the dynamic of this season. So it is huge. I mean, you look at Arsenal right now. Arsenal are kind of, they're running away with it. And they've had 8 goals to corners. And it's all because of these 8 goals to corners. I think what they got, they got something like a 7 or 8, 6 point lead or something at the top of the English top flight. And it's all to do with set piece delivery. So it's huge. It is huge. You know, but you know what surprised me? Because I'd thought to myself, Butland made an arse of that, the McGregor shot. But see, when you see it, and I've seen it from many, many angles, he was actually unsighted. Like, Suter left him unsighted. It was actually, it wasn't a goalkeeping error. You could understand why he didn't save it. It was hit with enough ferocity that causes a
problem. He goes early, actually.
He probably does
go
early.
He goes early.
I think he thinks McGregor is putting it into a corner. I think that's what you think. You know, it's obviously, when you watch it, it's gone reasonably quite, you know, it's gone quite central. And I think he does exactly that. I think he can see the Rangers defence isn't out quick enough. He can see that McGregor's about to hit it. And I think his assumption, you know, he's maybe slightly unsighted, but his assumption is this is probably because of his angle going to my, you know, to my top right. So I'm going to start to go there. And the power he hits it with, I mean, it's actually funny because I don't know if you watched the Motherwell and St Mirren game yesterday, but in the first half, the big striker hit the ball, and it's one of those ones, I know there was nobody behind the goals yesterday, you know, but if there hadn't been a net and there had been, somebody would have been killed by it, because it was one of those ones, yesterday, the big St Mirren guy, caught it absolutely perfectly. And it was the same with McGregor, you know, it was, given its position, should Butland have done better? Probably, I know that seems to be the narrative, but I think there was also just a bit, he does just hit it. And I think you forget sometimes, regardless of how good a keeper you are, everybody has a reaction time. It's like if you're driving, you know, one of the reasons you're told to leave a stopping distance, you know, a car in front of you is the simple reality that, you know, if you don't and they suddenly brake, you need to give yourself that reaction time. Well, it's the same in football. The reality is humans can only react at a certain speed. McGregor hit that ball. He caught it utterly perfectly from a power perspective.
Yeah,
it is very difficult for a keeper, especially if you're slightly unsighted and if you've perhaps started to move, to suddenly react to it. So
it was a howitzer. And I'll have to say, I thought he just deflected it. I thought it was just a kind of fortunate deflection from Osmond. But it was a good finish. It was a good finish. Great ball driven in, and he did that a few times when he came on, Gearn Tierney, what you call in cricket, the corridor of uncertainty, you know, between the keeper and the two centre-backs.
Centre-halves are running, the defence is running back, and it's just, they can't really hit it because they could put it in the back of the net,
yeah.
And the keeper can't really come out because it's not close enough to him for him to be able to come out for it. That is the perfect spot. Used to get me all annoyed that we didn't put the ball there when Andy Gorham was the Rangers keeper, because he never came off his line. He used to bug me that we never put the ball, just put it there, put it just.
Then again, you've got to be careful not to read too much into sort of, you know, singular issues or all the rest of it. But I thought that the Osmond's goal, we wouldn't have scored under Rodgers, because we would have had to have had two more passes before we just basically battered it into the middle. And for so long this season, that's been a lot of the problem. One of the reasons that we've had so few chances in many games, or certainly so few on target chances, is it's always been like, no, it has to be one extra touch. You're only allowed to shoot if you're within 12 yards of the goal, and if you've got a clear sight of it. And if not, you need to pass it to someone else. And if they don't have it, they need to pass it to someone else. And on and on and on.
Yeah.
And whereas there is just something to be said on occasion for just going, do you know what? Let's put the ball in the box. As you say, let's see what comes of it. You might get a deflection. You might, as with Osmond, you might, you know, it's going to fall to you. But actually, if you constantly do this, let's try and walk it in the net. And that, hopefully, again, it's hard to say. Look, it could have just been as simple as Tierney's in a good position and he, you know, throws across. I still can't decide if he was shooting or if he was, you know,
putting
a ball across.
I think he was just hitting it as hard as he could across goal and see what came. There was a few instances where, like, Tony Ralston did that a couple of times, where it just looked like, and again, this is what I think, we've been told, or the players have been told, you've got an issue scoring goals. Just keep putting the ball in that spot and see what comes. And there was a couple of times in the second half and in extra time, Tony Ralston came down and just battered the ball in. You know, it was clear his strategy was just, I'm just going to batter this ball in here and see what happens. A bit like pinball, you know, see what happens if I batter it in here.
But see when you think about it, Osmond could have had a hat-trick tonight. He could have had a hat-trick. When you think about how, like, how long was he on the pitch? 30-odd minutes, was it? When did he come on? About 70 or 78 minutes, maybe 40 minutes or something. He could have had a hat-trick. You could have had... Kenny could have had at least two. Then you should have had... Maeda should have possibly had two. Then you had... Hatate should have scored. Forrest should have scored. We've never been able to say that this season.
No, absolutely.
You can look at every one of those and say... Legitimately, you could say Forrest should have scored... Osmond at least a double, Kenny at least a double, Hatate, and
I thought it was quite interesting in the extra time that we played very similar to what we did against Falkirk. Maeda was up with Osmond, just off him, and had stopped playing out wide. And we are firing the ball out, and Tierney was playing effectively as the winger. We were firing the ball across to Tierney, and if Tierney then got the ball, Hatate was then coming out of midfield and sort of them playing as the auxiliary winger with him. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know whether that was a tactic because they were down to 10 men, but I just noticed it was also similar system to how we tried to play with Negrin against Falkirk for a period where he was neither a number 10 nor was he an out-and-out striker. He was just somewhere in the middle with there. So I don't know whether that's a Sean Maloney thing that he particularly likes, a player playing there, but it was almost like 4-2 for periods in extra time. Their penalty. So I listened to them talking about it on Radio Scotland, and it's not quite on the way home. And now I've seen it. It's not quite what I thought they were. It's not quite what they were describing in Radio Scotland. Does not completely align with what I saw in the TV coverage that I've seen.
What was the difference then? What was the
Well, you see, I thought Tony Ralston had dived down, picked up the ball, ran about the park, waved it up and down in the air, put it in the referee's face, gone like that, and then fell over and said, I didn't touch it. I thought that's what happened listening to Radio Scotland, as opposed to he's in a physical challenge with a Rangers player and is falling down, and he pulls his arms in. The only thing I would say is he knows because he's fallen down, he then thinks, well, I've now got an excuse to get myself in the way of the ball here. And I actually think the reason it hits his arm is because he's actually turning so that it hits his back. That's what I think. Oh, to avoid it hitting his arms, I think he's turning so it hits his back. So he's actually...
But did they want to make sure he was double-jointed by putting his...
No. It's the biggest handball stonewall penalty I've ever seen, and Celtic should have had three players sent off for that incident just to get... Was what radios... Honestly, at the game, I thought... Because it's far away and you can't quite make it out. But at the game, I'm thinking, right, he's gone down, it must have hit his arm. But I'm thinking, it's hit his arm as he's fallen down, so I'm still thinking VAR might rule it out. And then, listening to Radio Scotland, I'm thinking, it must have been really obvious that he hit his arm. McFadden was the only one who says, oh, but he did get a bit of a push in the Rangers player. A bit of a push.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know, I think, right, the main controversy tomorrow is probably now going to be Thrusty. I'm guessing that's going to be the thrust. Yeah. I think if you look at the decisions across today, the goal that we got cut off for offside, I don't know. Look, if VAR is saying, however marginal it is, it's offside, then fair enough, if that's the thing. Their red card is an absolute stonewall red card. Trust it, it would be charitable to say it's very lucky. You know, it was really stupid the way he's gone in for it. I think the penalty, their penalty was fortunate at best. The one I'm actually surprised that's not been brought up too much, and at least not for some sort of R check, though, was, I can't remember which player it was, but it was booked, the Rangers player in the first half, went in ankle high with the studs showing.
Yeah.
I saw a thing about that. Former English Premiership referee couldn't understand why he hadn't got shown a straight red.
Well, that was what I thought. I mean, if you watch that again, he's not pulled his foot out the way. He's not just, you know, he's not hit him with the front of his boot. his studs at a clear ankle height have gone up really hard. And this was obviously before Rangers actually were down to 10 men. And at the time, that was what I felt. I mean, at the time I felt, and having watched it back again a few times, I've just sort of felt to myself, that deserved at least, the question should have been asked, whereas it just sort of felt in terms of the game, right, play on, yellow, not play on, sorry, free kick, yellow card, we won't even have a VAR check for it. You know, there wasn't even that, you know, I'm going to put my hand up, I'm going to stop everything whilst we do the check. So, again, we can say Trusty was lucky, and I think he was, to be perfectly honest. But the reality is, I think even before they were down to 10 men, they should have been down to 10 men.
No, I agree with that. Because I actually said to my boy at the game, my brother, I said, I think this is going to get called back. I think he's going to go in a VAR check. Because as you say, because of the nature of the studs being up and very high, off the ground, so out Absolutely. Of control. Who was that? I mean, we're showing a...
Which... I can't actually remember.
I'm trying to see it. It's Keith Hackett. Derek Cornelius.
Was it Cornelius? I was going to say, I thought it was Cornelius.
Can't understand why he wasn't shown a straight red.
Right. Well, there you go. But well, we won't hear it another...
No,
another
no.
Squeak about that. There won't be another squeak about that.
No, and do you know what? Trust then, that'll be it. Yeah.
Do you know, have you noticed they're complaining a lot about referees, and again, I think it's because they're now being refereed to the same standard as everyone else and they don't like it. But yeah. A bit like in Northern Ireland where they're not happy that the RUC gets its name changed to the same name as every police force in the rest of the UK. They don't like it.
I know.
Because suddenly it's like brought into line with everybody else. Anyway, they will whinge about it. But one of my mates keeps making the point, remember when we were shite in the 90s, all we ever did was blame the referees?
Yeah.
So talking of... So one of the things that I noticed at the game was the singing that we sang.
Did you think it was that different?
Yes.
I heard lots of Orange Bees. I heard, when I was coming in, I heard Roman the Gloaming time and time again.
I thought it was... And actually, my Ranger supporting mate in the other end said, I noticed a big difference with the songs your lot sung.
Right. There was, I mean...
That's someone at the other end of the park.
Yeah, sure.
Who hates the Union Bears. There was 500 tickets taken away from both clubs because of flares.
You could see the little patch near the front. Was that where those 500 would have been?
No. They tried to do it with the segregation. I just think people went up and stood and blocked the passageways because Hampden's such a shit stadium.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And we took the tickets away from the people that we believed were responsible for the flares and the rockets, our ultras. They didn't.
The rockets were the rockets?
They didn't. Their Union Bears got the tickets. Are they frightened of the Union Bears?
Remember they invited them in. Remember they had all the pictures inside the Union Bears. They were like getting their tour.
Remember when they came in and they had...
They were getting their tour on the bike.
They had weapons inside the stadium and nothing happened to them.
That's right.
I just wonder if they're frightened of their own ultras.
Definitely. Anyway. And they also gave them their behind the goal as well, didn't they?
Yeah. So I also noticed my son thought the funniest song was about... Walking Away the Rangers Way.
Yeah. I was giving that loudly. It's funny to sing all these songs. It's funny to sing all these songs again.
It's always nice to laugh at it. You know, I think the funniest picture I've seen round is the one about the fire alarm, you know, saying it was highly dangerous of the Hampden authorities to have a fire alarm with about 20 minutes to go or 10 minutes to go in the Rangers.
So we won the game. Falkirk.
Thoroughly deserved.
Absolutely. We blew them away first half.
By the
we
way.
If we had the quality in the final third, we'd have scored 3 or 4 by half time.
I saw in the BBC stats, they said the percentage of possession stats, Celtic 51%, Rangers 49%. I cannot fathom that.
I think in fairness, in the first half, right, I thought Celtic were far and away the better team. I thought it was the best we've played for a long time. But it sort of still felt like, to me, if you'd been in neutral, you wouldn't have said Rangers are getting blown away. You'd have said Celtic were on top, but you wouldn't have said Rangers are getting blown away. And in particular, I felt, I mean, the reality is Rangers are 2 or 3 really, really good chances.
Schmeichel has a couple of incredible saves.
A great game.
The 3 kick at the back post where the guy just really misjudges it. Comes off his ankle or his knee, whichever there. So I think, and in another, you know, it's one of those goals change games. If they'd scored that, it's a very, very different, it's a different setting. So I think we deserved to win. I think it's the best we've played in a while. I don't think we totally blew them away.
No.
And I don't think you can sort of, you can't read too much into things. I always remember years ago having a weird argument with a friend about Ronnie Dyla, and it was just before we played Rangers in the Scottish Cup semi in 2016. And my line was, I would get rid of Dyla. Whatever happens against Rangers, I just didn't think that he was really suited to Scottish football. So even before we hadn't won that Scottish Cup that season, I was of the view that Dyla wasn't the one that we should do once that our Rangers for the first time, had made it into the top league. And I remember it was a weird argument because he sort of said to me, no, you can't. What, you're going to get rid of the guy, and he might do that. And I'd said, well, yeah. And I said, well, what do you think if we lose to the Rangers? Like, we should sack him. I'm like, so what you're saying is,
One game.
you're saying, yeah, you're actually, I'm not putting it on a game. I'm putting it on, what we've seen throughout, and I'm making a reasoned judgment. You're sort of going, well, I would keep him, but I wouldn't if he loses one singular game. And I think you can't read too much into things. It's great today, genuinely. We've now got a cup final to look forward to, which I think people, in the lead up, certainly before O'Neill coming back, were going into this game a bit more trepidatious. Now, though, you're hopefully, you've got two wins in a row, from a domestic perspective. You've got the ability now, hopefully, we've got a home game coming up. Hopefully, you're going to get the points there. Then you've got the international break, and your hope that you're going to start to get a start of momentum now. If you win the first trophy of the season, regardless of how Hearts are still doing, that just builds more momentum. But that's all it is. Today's really just a first, maybe a second step if you count the midweek game as well. But that's where we are. You can read little bits into it, but where we'll know is even by the time the cup final comes round, after the cup final, whether Maloney's in charge, whether it's O'Neill, whether somebody else are there, but we'll know if the season has really had a turnaround, or whether today was just two bad teams, and we happen to emerge as the better of the bad
Two
ones.
very flawed teams, you could tell that. Two very flawed teams. Two team fragile even. As much as flawed, fragile, because you saw how fragile Celtic were when it started to go against them in the early part of the second half. It was like you could almost see it, and you could feel it. The collective kind of anxiety across the crowd was like, oh no, not against 10 men. This isn't going to go wrong against 10 men. And can you imagine if Celtic had lost from the position they were in? I mean, where is
Absolutely.
O'Neill then? Where is the O'Neill Maloney? Where is the Kung Fu Panda coaching team?
Sean Ball. It's Sean Ball. Well, anyway, because we need to get off
Yes.
and get this up. And the fact is, we won. And we've got a
and it
big game
feels
on.
great, and it
It
feels
does
great.
feel great. And we've got, and it was, and it was, we didn't just win. It was an enjoyable game to, it was an enjoyable game.
Yes.
And we've got a big game on Thursday night. Martin O'Neill wins 4 out of 4. We are mid-table Europa League. We are in a cup final, and the board are just starting to relax their shoulders.
Yeah, Dermot saying, look at what I did. I put this guy in. Look at what I did. Look, you think I don't know my football club? My football club? I know my football club. Yous can get to.
Exactly. With that,
We'll
I
all
will
be happy
see.
then. When you're playing the song at the end, Bring Me Sunshine, we can just be happy that today, that the Celtic fans were cheering, and to keep up the Kung Fu Panda one, all the bamboos were at the other end.
On that note.
On that note, cheerio.
Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give. to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.